business goals. Tick. A vision board. Tick. You're all set, but have you made yourself accountable? When the going gets tough, it can be hard to stick to your goals. So what are you going to do now to help get the sticking power you need to see them through? Having a supportive group in your corner is essential in business. That's why I've started the Creative Slurp Accountability Club to help small business owners like you keep on track with your goals. We check in once a month to make sure we're all on track and bounce ideas around so you never feel alone again in your small business. And I take you through a monthly review and goal setting session to give you a framework to work from. It could be the support you need to take you to the next level. At the moment, it's just £15 a month to join, and you can sign up by going to my website, thevictoriabrown.com. That's thevictoriabrown.com, and click on Join Accountability Club. See you there. When the going gets tough, do you A, curl up in a ball under the duvet, or B, put yourself out there even more? On this episode of Creative Slurp Podcast, meet Rosie Davis-Smith, founder of PR Dispatch. She believes that to survive a recession, we should all be making our businesses even more visible using the power of PR. Find out about Rosie's business journey from budding textile designer to PR guru and how she overcame problems with postnatal insomnia. Plus, fill your glasses with some juicy PR tips you can use in your business. Enjoy. Welcome to Creative Slurp Podcast, giving you the juice to build a successful creative business with me, Victoria Brown, a creative business advisor, former jeweler and craft fanatic. Now you're in the right place if you want to find real talk, inspiration and the best tips and strategies for your handmade business without the overwhelm. We're all about making business exciting and fun. Now buckle up and let's get started. Hi Rosie, thank you so much for joining us on Creative Slurp. And I was just thinking that seeing you in your office just makes me think it's so weird because I'm so used to seeing you on Instagram all the time with your lovely background. So how weird. I feel like I'm talking to someone that's like Instagram famous.
Oh no. Not at all. I have to say Instagram is mainly Jazz has us handles our Instagram and she does an amazing job. So I can't take any credit for it. It's mainly Jazz.
I've heard so much about you and PR Dispatch from other small business owners and how much it's helped them. And that's how it first came on my radar, to be honest. And I just think it's so amazing that you're working with these really small businesses that are really intimidated and scared of PR and don't know what on earth they're doing. And so it's amazing. So for everybody that doesn't know you, just tell us a bit about you, what you do and who you work with.
So yeah, my name's Rosie Davis and I've got Smith now on the end, I suppose, since I got married. And I've been doing PR for businesses for the last decade. I had a PR agency for many years, about 9 years. And we worked with some great businesses, all product businesses. I always had a niggle that smaller businesses that maybe couldn't afford to work with a PR agency could do it themselves. So I started a business called PR Dispatch in 2017. So that is now what I do full time. And in terms of brands that we work with, we have about 450 PR members currently with us. We have 100 Christmas gift guide members and then 350 regular members. We call them PR members. And they are everything from homeware to fashion to lifestyle to food to drink to baby products. As long as they have a physical product, we can help them with PR.
Yeah, and you've phased out the actual agency side of it now, so obviously it's working.
Yeah, it is working. PR Dispatch started as a side hustle. It was kind of a secondary revenue stream, and I started with a small business, so I really wanted to kind of help small businesses that couldn't afford an agency. We used to charge kind of £2,000 a month plus to do PR for brands. And yeah, I just wanted to help smaller businesses. And I never thought it would turn into my main business, what it is today.
Yeah, I'm fascinated particularly by that, the Christmas gift guide membership in particular, because I just think that's such an amazing idea. What What helped you come up with that idea?
So I know that lots of brands want to see their products in Christmas gift guides. I think it's a dream for many people. I actually just saw one of our members who I've known for many, many years post on LinkedIn literally 2 minutes ago, like, finally in the Guardian Christmas gift guide. It's always been a dream of mine. And I think it is for a lot of brands to like see their product on the lead up to Christmas in a Christmas gift guide. It's really prestigious. It's great traffic. Lots of people read them. I think for us, PR is an all year round thing. It should be done consistently for the lifetime of your business. But Christmas makes it particularly easy to get featured because there are something ridiculous, like I think we counted last year, 47,000 products featured on the lead up to Christmas within Christmas gift guides. Like the Telegraph, the Telegraph produced 50 different online Christmas gift guides, each with about 30 products in each. So Christmas gift guides, the beauty is there's loads of opportunities. So that's why I started the Christmas gift guide PR membership, giving brands access to all the people compiling the Christmas gift guide. So access to the editors that are doing it, because the opportunities are increased. Therefore, if they do get featured, which lots of our members do, it gives them the confidence to think, oh, actually, yeah, I can do press. And actually, it's really easy. And yeah, it wasn't scary. So that's why I kind of started the Christmas gift guide. And now it is by far our biggest selling, quickest selling service of the year.
Amazing. And I think it's not only the fact that they get amazing coverage. I think that when people read those gift guides, they're in the frame of mind that they need to buy as well. So it's so powerful.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly that. People are looking for products to purchase. They kind of, we say PR is all about like the top of funnel awareness and like building trust and credibility, and it shouldn't ever be about sales. But the beauty of Christmas gift guides is it is about sales, because people actually want to shop, especially if it's an online Christmas gift guide. First brand that I ever started with, Loewe, I started as their intern doing their PR. And in 2000, I worked for them for years, but in 2017, I got them in the Guardian Christmas gift guide. I'm Guardian again. And even in 2020, it was still sending through website traffic. So kind of that being featured that long ago can still be driving great kind of website traffic and SEO today.
Yeah, and it adds massive prestige as well, of course.
Yeah, it's all about popping that logo on your website.
So I am actually amazed by your story. So you talked about where you started out in for Loewe, but actually, although you've achieved amazing things in the world of PR, you never had any formal training in PR or any kind of background before you took on that role. You just kind of seemed to work it out as you went along, which is, I find, astounding.
Yeah, I should give Bronwyn credit. So Bronwyn, who's the design director and founder of Loewe, did give me a half an hour training on what PR was. I had no idea that that is how products, I just had no idea that that's how products ended up in magazines. This is back in like 2010, 2011. And she was like, this is how it works. I want you to email them all, tell them about our knitwear, and we're going to get some coverage for Christmas. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But my background before that was actually textile design. So I did a BA and MA in textile design. I wasn't particularly a very good designer. I think you need to be a really good designer to do really well in that industry. So while I was interning with all these brands and businesses, all product businesses, I kind of wanted to get more into marketing. I never thought I'd end up in PR. And I think because I came from that background, I'm naturally an introvert. I didn't come with any previous press contacts or people that I knew or friends of all that kind of jargon that comes with the PR industry. I knew that, you know, small businesses could do it themselves easily if they just knew how.
But you must have had something in you, because obviously you made a success of it and you're still here now, all these years later. So yeah. Amazing. And I think maybe there was a certain you had a certain naivety maybe that helped you, because I think a big part of it, particularly when you start out, is being brave enough to approach people, because of the amount of people that you need to approach to get any coverage. And I suppose you were just like, you had nothing to lose.
I had nothing to lose. I think it wasn't my brand as well, which is something we really help our members get over. I think sometimes like talking about yourself, it can feel a bit ick, especially when you're trying to like, pitch to the press. So yeah, it was easier because it was a great product and it wasn't my product. It's actually the jumper that I'm wearing now. So it was really easy to PR. But then I think we try and get our members over it. So I say, if you can create an alter ego, that might help. So some of our members, I tell them, you know, create a different email address, put it from someone else. It doesn't have to be you, and just write as if you're a different person. And sometimes it can feel a little bit easier if you're doing it that way.
Yeah, definitely. And what would be your top PR tips, I guess, for any business owners starting out in PR?
Oh, imagery. So good PR is always because there's great imagery. So if you're a product-based business, good images of your product, cutout shots on a white or clear background, lifestyle shots always kind of really help. If you're a kind of founder or creative, having some headshots of you always really helps with press, maybe you in your workspace. You mentioned my workspace earlier. I had some kind of images done in here a while back, so we could pitch that, and that got picked up by 91 Magazine, which is a lovely independent creative magazine. So having great imagery leads to great coverage. The biggest mistake I see brands make time and time again is not having kind of good imagery to send to the press. And if they did have it, it's just so much easier. And then my other piece of advice would be kind of, it's something to do consistently. Found over the years, lots of people have come to me, not so much with PR Dispatch, more with kind of the agency. But lots of people have come to me and they say, we need sales and, you know, we need to do PR for 3 months and see the return on investment. You know, then we'll make a decision. And I kind of always said, well, PR's not like that. It's something you're going to do consistently for the lifetime of your business. It's going to grow over time. So at first you'll be featured kind of on a really small platform, and then you might be in The Guardian, and then you might be on the BBC, and kind of your coverage leads to coverage. So it's not something you just pick up and drop. And the more you do it consistently, the better coverage you're going to see, and the more your business is going to grow over time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think when I was a journalist at the BBC, I think one of the things we were looking for all the time was stories and unique stories. And I think people can get quite overwhelmed with that and without identifying what their story is. Because when I started out my jewellery blog, I went out to all these jewellers at fairs and I said to them, right, I want to tell your story. I want to tell your story. And they were like, we don't have stories. I was like, you do have a story. Everywhere, the fact you are standing here selling your jewelry, you have a story. Yeah. But people find it really hard to find that. What would your advice be for people finding their own story and kind of believing that they have one?
I think about how much you're willing to open up your life. The more that you're willing to open up your life, the more kind of stories you're going to have. For example, we moved from London to Devon during the pandemic, and I didn't see one of the team saw a shout out from a journalist on Twitter looking for people that had relocated across country during the pandemic. And if I hadn't, and my husband hated me for it, but if I hadn't been willing to open up our lives and talk about it and stand in the garden for a photo with the Telegraph photographer, we wouldn't have got that coverage. So I think when you're looking for stories, look at what's going on in your life, look at what you're overcoming. Your stories will always change. So I've had 2 kids in the last few years and I'm dealing with insomnia. So all of that forms kind of the story that I tell around my business. It's not always about your business. It might be about something else, that kind of the juggle between business and working full time. I don't know, but look at your life and think about how your stories are going to evolve kind of over the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's great advice. Because you mentioned you've had children over the last few years. How has that affected you and your business? Because obviously your business has been going a lot longer than your children.
My business was my baby first. Yes, it's been interesting. Well, you know, because one of them's just had chicken pox and the other one is a ticking time bomb for the next bout of chicken pox that we're going to have. So I think what I've learned is I just have to be flexible. Luckily, I have a small team of people. There's 5 or 6 of us. So if I can't kind of host a workshop or a talk, Jasmine always covers, which is really, really beneficial. But sometimes I do just have to drop everything and, you know, go and pick them up because they've got nursery bugs. I was thinking this morning, actually, you know, Mondays used to look very different. I used to get out of bed, have a shower, maybe have some breakfast. This morning I woke up at 5:30 because one of them was crying, and then we were all up and we watched Gruffalo in bed while I tried to like sort my face out. And then there was lots of screaming. They are both still under 3. So lots of screaming. And I thought, God, how unrelaxing is this to start the week? But it's, you know, it's lovely that they're here. I think it's just finding the juggle. And also my husband's working away a lot at the moment. And I think with a lack of support is something I think is really, really important. Getting some support, whatever that might look like in terms of nursery or friends. My friend Meg is going to cover me if one of them catches chickenpox over the next 2 days. She's just going to come and sit in my house. So, yeah, getting that support network is really, really crucial.
No, that's so true. And I just think it's so funny you say that, because you hear about people say all this advice for business owners, like, oh, have this morning routine that's really relaxing. And you're like, I've got a 3 and a 5-year-old. That is not going to happen. I wake up and one of them's in my bed. I woke up this morning. The one of them was in my bed, the 3-year-old, and my husband actually is sleeping in the 3-year-old's bed. And it's like musical beds throughout the night. So there is no way. And like you say, then you wake up and you're screaming and running and fighting and doing everything else that is not conducive to starting a working day. But you've just got to go with the flow, haven't you? So yeah, that is, I think that's one of the lessons that we all learn. But in particular, you had an issue with insomnia, didn't you, with your second child? Mm-hmm. So that's obviously quite extreme. What happened there and how did that manifest?
I started to get insomnia a few months after she was born, and it just progressively got worse, to the point where I was sleeping about 3 hours a night. It's not much, I have to be honest, it's not much. She's now 19 months old, 20 months old. It's not much better, but I feel like I'm getting there. I have done every single thing I can possibly think of, and I've been advised to battle insomnia. I've tried teas, herbal, CBD oil, therapies, candles, smells, reflexology, acupuncture. I've actually just had a different type of therapy where you basically tap rapid eye movement. That's it. Yeah. And that has really, really helped. But it just, again, like last night, one of them was crying at one because she needed the potty. And you just can't predict how they're going to be. I think it's going to be kind of an ongoing battle. I try to like empty my brain as much as possible, have a really good night routine. I've got a notepad by my bed. I just write so many notes. I'm not thinking of work at night, but you never know what they're going to be like in the night. I think it's going to be a long battle, but I'm determined to try anything. So if any of your listeners do have any recommendations for anything I haven't tried for insomnia, please send them over to my Instagram.
How does that affect you and your business then? If you only have 3 hours every night, that's really hard. And how do you wake up the next morning and still be fully alert and do your job properly, I guess?
I think I've kind of got used to the lack of sleep. If I can get 4 hours, I'm actually fine. There was a time when I was getting less than 4 and I found it really, really hard. And actually, I had to turn around to the whole team and say, I just can't work today. I had to cancel some workshops that I had, but that was the only time actually I've had to do it. We are now actually work a 4-day work week, so we're doing the trial, our own little trial, not the government trial, and yeah, so the whole team only work Monday to Thursdays and everyone's off on a Friday, which I think is good for me and for the team. So on a Friday I try and get a bit more headspace, do a bit of therapy, try and do an app, a bit of reading. The kids are still in childcare, so that really helps. But yeah, I think that kind of gives me a bit of headspace rather than working 5 days a week and then looking after kids all weekend. I've kind of got that Friday to get myself sorted before delving into 2 toddlers.
Yeah, it's interesting you've moved to a 4-day week. I hear more and more people doing that. What kind of prompted you to do that?
When we kind of were all together, we tried to have a big focus on wellness and like team happiness, making sure like we had a team day out every 6 months. We did flexible hours anyway. We've done half a day Friday since 2017 or 18. So we've all only been working 4 hours on a Friday anyway. And actually what I was finding was we'd work 4 hours and then we'd all work another 4 hours on a Friday. And we were making up the hours kind of the other days, the 4 hours that we weren't working, but that we were working them. So actually I reduced our hours Monday to Thursday back till 9 till 5:30 and gave everyone a Friday off.
Wow.
I think it's really working. Like the girls team say they're really enjoying it. Kind of it makes them focus harder on the other days. And if we really do need to work, we do kind of get on with stuff on a Friday, but just very quietly in the background. No one's expected to be online. And I'm very clear with our members. I think my biggest worry was our members. You know, I really want to be there for them, but I've got to put team happiness and kind of my mental health as well at the forefront. So I kind of said to our members, you know, we are around Monday to Thursday. You can ask us any questions in the community group Monday to Thursday and we will get back to you. But on a Friday, no one is there. So on a Friday, you know, send us your email if you've got an account question, or pop it in the group if you've got a PR question, but we will get back to you on a Monday. And it does still worry me when I see a question pop up on a Friday and I think, oh, I hope they know we don't work a Friday. But yeah, they've all been really, really understanding, which is great.
That's lovely. And amazing, actually, because when you said 4-day week, I assumed that you'd be going to longer days the other day. So to not have longer days and still have the Friday off, that's amazing.
Yeah, we've tried. I wanted to make it a 4-day work week, so reduced hours, because otherwise it's a 5-day work week into 4 days.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, we've gone for the reduced hours on the same pay. And yeah, it seems to be working.
Good. That's amazing. So you've had some amazing moments across your career, loads of amazing PR opportunities, winning awards. You even appeared on The Apprentice, which is amazing. So I was wondering, what's been your favourite moment of your journey so far?
By far, by miles, the coverage that our members get. It's unbelievable. And I remember the first ever piece before I started a company, before I started PR Dispatch, separate company from the agency, I said, we're just going to trial this business. We're going to say to people on our mailing list for the agency, you know, do you want to sign up for this service? We'll send you press contacts and a pitch email template, and you can send it off to the press yourself. It'll cost you kind of 3% of what it would cost with a PR agency. So we trialed it. We had quite a few brands sign up over the first few weeks, and 3 weeks in, we had a member gain their first piece of coverage in the Metro. And I remember them sharing it and saying, I can't believe it. My small candle brand's just been featured in the Metro. And that is by far the best moment of running both businesses. I just thought, that is incredible. The fact that, you know, they emailed them themselves, they got this themselves, and within 3 weeks, they've been featured in the Metro. And since then, there's been thousands of pieces of coverage. So it never gets old.
Do you think that most small business owners don't take enough opportunity of the, you know, things they could do in the PR world?
Absolutely. PR is the most kind of, if you get it right, PR can be the most cost-effective way to reach people. You know, if you're getting exposure, not just national publications, but niche publications as well, maybe podcasts, you know, speaking on panels, speaking at events, that is the best way to reach people. And I think lots of small businesses think, oh, it's not for me, or I'm not big enough, or maybe there's kind of a lack of confidence around doing it. But there are so many opportunities, no matter what size your business is or what your business is, you should always be gaining awareness of your brand, product and story.
So has it surprised you how your business has evolved over the years? So it's changed from that person that knew nothing about PR, was like, oh, I can send these emails out to these people. And now you're running this team of people getting small businesses amazing coverage. What do you think when you look back and think of of your journey?
I can't believe that was me. how did that happen? I definitely think like there's a sense of like pride and really, really happy. I think a lot of it is down to the team. You know, working alongside great people means I can work on strategy, and the implementation is always really, really good. You know, at the moment we're building a completely custom built platform. We've got a great like team of people working on it. So it's a lot down to them. But I guess if I'd have looked at my life now from 5 years ago, I never thought that PR Dispatch would be the breadwinner, be the business that was bigger than the agency ever was. I always just thought it was going to be a small little side hustle supporting businesses. And actually when COVID hit, the agency was just wiped out overnight. We lost about 15 clients and we had two left. And I had to pivot the team from the agency over to PR Dispatch, and PR Dispatch just grew. I couldn't believe how quickly people were signing up. And I think it became very relevant. You know, the press wanted to hear from small businesses. They wanted to support them during COVID. Brands had the time. People were at home. People could watch workshops. People wanted to upskill. So it just became a really relevant business during that time, which was very beneficial for us.
I find it really interesting that you started off as a PR, so your knowledge was of PR, but clearly now you're employing people, you've got a team, you're running a business, a profitable business that's doing well. Clearly there's so many more skills that you've learned along the way to actually run a business. Where did you learn all those business skills?
My dad ran his own business. I think I always knew from about age 6 or 7 that I wanted to run my own business, mainly because dad always said, I'm really dyslexic, wasn't very good at school. And Dad always said, you might not be very good at school, but you'd be great at running your own business. You've got good negotiation skills. So yeah, I did always know, and I wanted to run a business. And I think when, you know, when I was at university, I was more interested in kind of learning about marketing and sales funnels. And I mean, I was doing textiles, so I was learning none of this stuff, but I was interested in like customers and pain points and how to speak to those customers and, you know, the journey that they go on to purchase. I found that really, really interesting. And I kind of started to read books. And actually, if you look at my company's house records, you'll see a couple of failed businesses on there from when I was probably about 20 years old and started companies thinking I knew what I was doing and I totally didn't. But I think, yeah, lots of books, asking Dad when I'm in trouble or have a question. And yeah, I think if you grow up around it, it makes it seem like the norm. Mm. I was never scared of running a business because I just thought it was normal. But if it was now, if I was mid-30s with two kids and a mortgage, I've got a lot of respect for people that make the leap. I was just young and naive.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say you had all these other previous businesses, because we see Rosie and we think, wow, look at her with an amazing PR dispatch business. It just happened really easily and became an overnight success. And she's got all these people and members. And then it's like, well, no, you went through the trenches. You did it all. And we all do. But nobody sees that.
I started a tweed business and sold not one product. So
brilliant. So was the vision at the start that you were going to have a business, but it was going to be a textiles business?
I thought it'd be a textiles business, but not me designing the prints, because that would have been an awful idea. But yeah, I did think it would be product. I always thought it'd be product based. And like all my internships were doing product based internships, you know, to learn the ropes. I remember when I was interning at Lowy, like Bronwyn was throwing away a load of paperwork. I probably still got it somewhere. She'd laugh now knowing this. And I was like, I'm going to keep all this because this explains how wholesale works. I've got folders and folders of like lists of trade shows and how to price products and all this stuff that I just didn't need because I'd never run a product business, but I thought I needed it. So yeah, maybe one day, who knows? Who knows what's next?
Well, I'm fascinated as to why you actually went into textile design if you didn't think you were a good designer and you were never going to do anything out of it, even though you knew you wanted a business.
I loved art and textiles at school, and it was the only thing, you know, I think it was probably one of the only things I passed, never mind was good at. So I did art and textiles throughout kind of GCSEs. I don't have any A-levels because I failed them, but art foundation and then BA and then MA. And I loved the creative process. I loved being in a studio. You know, I loved screen printing, but I just didn't like the competitive nature of it. And I think you've got to be really good. Like one of my best friends is a textile designer, and she's actually one of our members as well. She's absolutely fantastic at what she does, and I'm just not that passionate to be that good. I found another path.
But you were passionate about business, clearly, because you were geeking out on that, and then that is why you're so successful now.
Hope so.
Yeah. It just goes to show that you don't have to like get the 11 GCSEs A star or whatever to be a successful business person. In fact, I think those people probably aren't the best business people.
That's very, very true. You don't need the GCSEs.
Yeah, you just found your way. That's amazing. Yeah. Love it. I'd love to ask, you mentioned you're an introvert. I'm an introvert. Every creative business owner I know is an introvert, but yet we still have to put ourselves out there. How does this affect them getting great PR, and how can people get over that?
I think, remember, it's not a sales transaction. So when you contact the press, you are pitching yourself or suggesting something that might help them to put together a feature. So, you know, they might be doing a roundup of the best ethical boutiques in the Southwest, for example. And if you contact the journalist and you flag up that you're an ethical boutique in the Southwest, at some point they might come back to that email when they're doing that feature and say, oh, actually, this is really relevant for what I'm working on now. Can you please send me an image? So as an introvert, thinking of it as not a sales, it's not a sales pitch, it's not a transaction, you're helping them to do their job can really, really help you get over that hurdle. I think the other thing that as an introvert that kind of affects people when they're doing PR is you don't hear back. Yeah. So you'll only hear back if they want something from you, which the likelihood that you are going to send something relevant at the moment they are working on something relevant is nearly impossible. Mm. but it's about being in their inbox. So it's about, you know, if you've got products, for example, if they're doing a cushion feature, they'll search their inbox for cushions, up will pop all the pictures about cushions, and then they might get back to you. And we have it every single day. It's members, and they say, I sent this pitch 3 months ago, I sent this pitch 6 months ago, I sent this pitch 9 months ago, I actually just got an email back and they want to feature me. So it's just about being in their inbox and being consistent with it. The way we get our members doing it, and a lot of them are introverts as well, we say, right, you're going to spend 1 hour a week and that's it. Obviously they have access to a press database, so therefore they've got all the press contacts and it makes it really easy. But we say send 5 to 10 emails and then forget about it. And we have a session on a Tuesday morning called the accountability call, where members that maybe are feeling a bit overwhelmed by it, or aren't blocking up the time to do it, or kind of are an introvert and have the ick, we say, come along. And in that hour, it's a silent call, but you can chat to us in the chat. In that hour, we just want you to send at least 5 pitches. And a lot of them just get it done. And then I say, forget about it. Now it's done.
Yeah.
You literally don't need to think about it until next Tuesday. And then we're going to send one follow-up, and then we'll start with 5 more. And just by getting on that kind of, into that kind of habit of sending them every single week, not thinking about it, forgetting about it, means you're doing it, you're discoverable in their inbox, and you can get over that ick. Just do it. That's it.
Yeah, once you've done things, it's so true, like habits thing. Once you've started doing things, it becomes normal. It really does take away the fear. And the thing that always really helped me is because I was a journalist and I know what it's like to be a journalist, which is helpful. And basically, you're just completely overworked. You've got no time. And people coming forward giving you relevant ideas is like a massive help. So I always used to say to people, if you think that you're an annoying journalist, if you've got a relevant idea, believe me, you are massively helping them out, because they've got so much airtime or so much space that they have to fill, and they've got to find so many ideas to fill that. If you can help them out by sending them out, like, you are their best friend.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever feel bad about contacting journalists. But like you say, don't expect them always to come back, because they are so busy.
When this comes out, I'm gonna snippet that bit and put that on our website.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, anytime. So yeah, I know what it's like, because I'd be producing the mid-morning show, for example, at one time, and then be on air. We'd have like an hour before the show to prepare, then we'd on air for 3 hours, and then we'd have lunch, and then we'd have like 2 hours to get ready the show for the next day. And there were like two of us, and that was it. And it was 3 hours speech program. And you're like, how the hell? And you were just like on a cycle all the time. And when we got something good, it was like, oh my God, thank you so much, because you helped us out. Like, we need 9 ideas a show, because we need 3 an hour. So like, that's like a massive help. So I always do say to people, don't ever think that you're bugging, unless you're being really annoying. Like, there are some people that are really annoying, but try not to be annoying.
Yeah.
And you will be their best friend. Yeah,
exactly. If you can give them an idea that they can run with, I'm sure they'll be very grateful.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about bugging them. I used to have to bug everybody and for the breakfast show in the morning. That used to be the part of the job I hated the most, but it really built up a muscle in me to approaching people, like having to approach guests that you just didn't know whether they were going to get. You just have to ring loads and loads of people. And like you say, it's that habit, and it just builds that muscle. And it's like, oh, I've got to, you know, have to ring this MP. And I used to hate disturbing people early in the morning, because I used to know I'd hate it myself, but I'd be like, no, my editor was like standing over me, so it's like, I have no choice. Like, have you got a guest for the 8 o'clock lead on the breakfast show yet? Not yet.
it's so good to hear. It's the other way around too. It's so good to hear. There you go.
It is, yeah. And then you get a guest like sometimes 2 minutes before you're about to go, and you're like, oh, thank God for that. Got a guest. But it's like major stressful. So yeah, any ideas or story ideas are like, or amazing, you know. Anyone that's half good at talking on the radio is just like, just appreciate it, because it's just like so helpful.
I think actually being able to speak is a really good trait to have if you want to kind of do that kind of PR. So podcasts or panels, or like, we get kind of most of our business from doing panels and talking about PR. But yeah, being able to stand up and speak in front of people, I think, is a really, really good trait. So if you are listening and that is you, that might be a really good place to start. You know, there's a podcast for every niche industry out there. So maybe some podcast interviews would be a great place to start if you kind of are nervous about reaching out to the written press to start with.
Yeah, definitely. And those podcasters are always looking for guests.
There you go.
I can tell you. They've always got podcasts to make and guests to find. So yeah, Exactly.
You're going to be inundated now.
Yeah. What's next for you and your business now, Rosie? You know, you've got PR at Dispatch up and running. You've let go of the agency. What's next on your horizon other than getting over the insomnia?
Getting over insomnia and weathering the recession.
Yes,
is the next big task. I am a real believer that you have to be proactive. We're going to face a really kind of turbulent few years, if you like. I've already started to notice it in terms of member cancellations. We've been hit quite hard over the last month, which I totally understand. Brands are cutting costs. I'm doing the same in terms of business. But if there was ever a time to go for it, it's now. So I always dreamt of having a custom built platform. And we've been quite lucky that we made a profit the last few years. So I am now plowing all those profits back into a custom built platform, which is absolutely terrifying, because I think spending when you're about to go into a recession, I think just generally is terrifying. But I also think it is the way to recession proof a business. So yeah, that is kind of what we're doing at the moment. We're hoping to launch February 2023. Yeah. Although we are running all the tests this week for the migration. So we'll see if that works first. And we are always going to be for small businesses, but we're also hoping kind of maybe some of the brands that we used to work with at the agency, we've already started to see it happen. Lowy, the first brand I ever worked with, became a member of ours last week. We've already started to see those slightly more established brands move into a more affordable kind of PR option, which is the gap that we fill. So maybe stopping working with more expensive PR agencies or freelancers and taking the PR in-house themselves. We started to see that over the past few months. So yeah, slightly more established brands joining PR Dispatch too, which will be lovely.
That's so interesting. So instead of having outsourcing PR support, getting maybe someone who's more like, I don't know, an admin or someone that's not an expert in PR who's working for them, and then join the membership. That's such an interesting.
That's exactly it. We find it's a lot of either customer service or marketing execs, or just the person that does marketing. It's normally brands with about a team of anywhere between 5 and 20. You know, they've got those people in house. They're already paying them, and the beauty is that these people that are doing the marketing that work for the brand, they want to recession proof their job. They want to make themselves more valuable. Therefore, it makes sense for them to upskill. They can learn a new skill of PR. They learn it in 2 hours. It's so easy. You go through the course in 2 hours, you'll be a PR expert. So within 2 hours, they can start outreaching to the press, and it means they can control their brand message. They can control what products are sent, what images are sent. So yeah, hopefully with a brand new shiny platform, that will help slightly more established business, as well as kind of the smaller solo founders as well.
That's really exciting. And I totally agree about I think in recession, it's so tempting and it is so natural, really, almost to want to contract. But really, you need to be thinking about expanding. That's your opportunity. And it's hard, it's mentally hard to go over that. But you've got to push forward, because how else are you going to grow and find new business if it's dropping off? It has to be the marketing and the PR.
Exactly. And that's, if I could kind of leave brands with one kind of nugget of wisdom apart from the imagery, now is the time to do PR. Don't kind of think, I'll wait till sales pick up, because I know sales are slow for a lot of brands. I don't think, I'll wait till mid 2023, that's going to be too late. Like, now is the time to start building brand exposure, building awareness, getting people into your sales funnel so you can market and sell to them, converting them into customers. You know, it's really important that you are going to be one step ahead of your competitor or other brands in your industry, kind of as consumer spending reduces. So don't put it to the bottom of the to-do list. Start it as soon as possible.
Yeah. And especially if other people are putting it at the bottom of the to-do list, that will make you stand out even more. So it's going to give you more opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all your wonderful tips today, Rosie. I've really enjoyed our chat and hearing about your amazing story, because I just think it's so inspiring for people to hear how that people that succeed aren't necessarily these people that have done amazing at school or, you know, just picked up a business and then done it and it's succeeded, that you do have to go through these failures, and it's normal. And it's normal to, you know, need to find your thing. It doesn't happen, you know, straight away necessarily. So I think it's really inspiring for people to know that, as you know, as well as all the amazing PR tips. So if people want to find out more about you, a PR Dispatch, maybe become a member or join or whatever, where can they find you?
On Instagram, at PR Dispatch, DISPATCH, or it's prdispatch.com. And we have two memberships, a starter membership, which is just £15 a month, which will help get your brand ready for PR. And then our PR memberships, which gives you access to all the press contacts that you'll need to reach out to the press. And that starts at £54 a month.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Victoria.
Thank you so much for listening to Creative Slurp. I hope it's inspired you to try something new in your business. If you loved it, please take the time to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you soon, and go and chase your biggest creative business dreams. You can do it.